Why do the gospel accounts differ? Why did Jesus use parables? Are there demon-possessed people today? The Issues Etc. Book of the Month for August is the big book of New Testament questions and answers. You can find out more at issuesetc.org or by calling Concordia Publishing House, 1-800-325-3040. The Big Book of New Testament Questions and Answers is written by Dr. Michael Eschelbach of Concordia University, Chicago. The Big Book of New Testament Questions and Answers. Here is how the passage reads in the translation that I have before me, and maybe translation is a big question here. It comes from Exodus 21, beginning at verse 22. When men have a fight and hurt a pregnant woman so that she suffers a miscarriage, but no further injury, the guilty one shall be fined as much as the husband's demand of him, and he shall pay the fine in the presence of the judges. But if injury occurs, you shall give life for life, eye for eye, tooth for tooth, hand for hand, foot for foot, burn for burn, wound for wound, stripe for stripe. Now, at first, it sounds like two men are fighting, a pregnant woman is caused to give birth, the child dies, and all that is incurred is a fine. Is that what that passage from Exodus chapter 21 actually says? We're continuing our series, part two of our series, on Does the Bible Support Abortion Rights? That's the passage for today. Our guest for today on this Wednesday afternoon, Dr. Kevin Golden. He's pastor of Village Lutheran Church in Ladue, a suburb of St. Louis, and he has a PhD in Biblical Studies from Concordia Seminary in St. Louis. Dr. Golden, welcome back to Issues Etc.
It's good to be with you as always.
We're going to be talking about a single passage here in Exodus chapter 21 that is in the middle of a bigger piece of Exodus, kind of legal casuistry. Can you explain the context of this passage so we don't take it out of its context, as is often done in trying to assert that it would support abortion?
Well, yeah, exactly right. The number one thing in keeping the proper interpretation of a text is keeping it within its context. So our listeners will be familiar with Exodus chapter 20 as the giving of the Ten Commandments early. That's the first item of business in Exodus chapter 20. And this is really following on that very thing, that here is the Lord setting forth his law. The law as God gives it, not only there in Exodus, but also in other places within the Pentateuch, those first five books that were written by Moses, is that they cover a variety of different things, including these are going to stand forth as, if you will, civil law for the people as well. So this is governing how they're going to live together and such. So within Exodus chapter 21, the big thing that's really in play is that there's a variety of laws regarding slaves, about how you will handle your slaves, the treatment that you give them and such, so that you don't abuse them, but rather show them due respect as those who have been created by God and such. And so with this specific passage, it's coming in that greater context, flowing out of that discussion about how do you treat slaves. But now here's some other, well, possibilities of where individuals could suffer harm. And in those circumstances, how are you going to make sure that some semblance of justice is done?
Okay, so the passage here simply reads, when men have a fight and hurt a pregnant woman so that she suffers a miscarriage, but no further injury, the guilty one shall be fined as much as the woman's husband demands of him, and he will pay in the presence of the judges. But if injury ensues, presumably to the woman, you shall give life for life, eye for eye, tooth for tooth, hand for hand, foot for foot, burn for burn, wound for wound, stripe for stripe. Now, this is a very important principle here that we'll talk about here in a minute, but the argument that is made by those who advocate for abortion is that right here we have a distinction between the value of the woman's life and the value of the unborn child's life. The child's life is only worth a fine. The woman's life or injury should be equal to whatever it is. Therefore, it could be up to the death penalty if the woman is killed. There, they say, is this disparity between the value of those two lives. What do you say?
Well, even within your reading of the text, we find that there is a huge assumption that is made to arrive at that conclusion. So that in verse 23, it says, if there is harm, but there's actually nothing in the text that says, if there is harm to the woman, you will give life for life. Or so that could very easily be understood. And probably the best way to understand it is that since it's not specifying if there's harm to the woman, just harm in general, it could be to the woman or to the child, then you're going to give life for life.
Now, are they presuming here, and maybe the text simply doesn't answer the question, that when it's translated, hurt a pregnant woman so that she suffers a miscarriage, is that assuming that this is a, usually we think miscarriage would be a child that is stillborn, but is it possible that what we're dealing here is a situation in which the woman is caused to give birth early, that is to miscarry, but the child might be born alive or harmed?
You have just hit the nail on the head. This is actually the linchpin of the whole thing is, what does this actually say? And I'm going to give you a translation of verse 22 that is a bit of a wooden translation, but it really reveals what's going on in the text. If men struggle with each other and they strike a pregnant woman and her child comes out and there is not harm, he shall surely be fined as the lord of the woman sets upon him, and he will give it to the judges. So the key here would be what is understood as miscarriage. Actually, the Hebrew just simply says that the child comes out. Now, what does that mean for the child to come out? The best way to understand it is exactly what you just said, Todd, and that is that the child had premature birth. Now, that premature birth can happen, as even verse 22 suggests, that comes out and there is not harm, that the child is born prematurely and there's no real harm to the child. Well, thanks be to God. And then there's just a fine. But verse 23, if there is harm to mother or child, then you give life for life. Then you get the appropriate punishment that comes upon them. So to dig into that a little bit more, the word that's specifically used there to talk about the child coming out in verse 22 is a very common Hebrew word. The word is yatsah. It's used a lot, but it's used in a specific way within the book of Exodus. It's huge in the book of Exodus. It's the same word that's translated as Exodus, to come out, is where we get Exodus itself. It's used repeatedly within this book by God himself. He caused the people to come out, that very verb. So it has a very positive connotation, not a negative connotation.
So just to pause there for a second, this is not a mistranslation as much as it isn't as clear a translation as it could be.
Exactly. So the very straightforward translation would be, the child comes out. This actually is the standard way to talk about, or one of the standard ways to talk about, a child being born. A few examples. Many people are familiar with Jeremiah chapter 1, verse 5, where God says about Jeremiah, before you were created in the womb, I knew you, and before you were born, I had set you apart. All right. Well, what's translated usually as before you were born is actually the same verb. So before you came out of the womb, I had set you apart. So notice there in Jeremiah, it's very clearly not talking about anything like a miscarriage or anything traumatic, but rather it's just the child coming forth from the womb. Yet another example, staying within the book of Exodus itself. Exodus 1 verse 5 talks about how you have the people of Israel who are down in Egypt, and these are all that when they started in Egypt, there was only 70 of them. And it specifically says, the English translations usually say something like 70 descendants of Jacob. But the literal Hebrew is once again using the same word, that there were 70 who came forth from Jacob. So once again, this word is just regularly used to talk about those who descend either from their mother or their father. So at the blanket use, you don't typically have this coming forth in a negative sense, but it's just simply saying the child is born.
So we should say here, this is the scenario. Two men are having a fight. A pregnant woman gets caught in the crossfire. She gives birth prematurely.
Mm-hmm.
If anyone is harmed, woman or child, there's going to be you'll have to explain this lex talionis to us, this law of reciprocity or whatever it's called. If either one, mother or child, are hurt, but if the child's okay, it's going to cost the guy who caused the harm, but that's
yes.
It.
Yes, exactly. But on the other hand, since lex talionis, or here, eye for eye, tooth for tooth, hand for hand, etc., if the child dies in the process, what would be the right punishment for this guy? Death as well. Whether it's mother or child, following through the normal translation of this, that's the conclusion you would end up with.
So rather than creating a distinction between the value of mother and child's life, this reinforces it.
Oh, exactly, exactly. And yet another way in which you will see this is even the word that's used here for child. The Hebrew word there is yelad, which is simply a noun form of the verb yelad. Yelad is used for a woman that she bears a child. It's used for a man that he begets a child. And that word yelad, the begotten, the born child, is used for a child whether in the womb, like here, or it's used for a child outside the womb as well, which is the Hebrew way of kind of pointing out whether the child is within the womb or outside the womb, it's still a child. One who has been born by this woman, either she's still in the bearing process or she's already born the child, or here's a child who's been begotten of a specific father.
All right. What is that law that's at work here? This, and it's a long little litany, eye for eye, tooth for tooth, and
yes.
Jesus even talks a little bit about this.
Yeah, it often gets a bad rap, and it's set forth as it's so draconian that you're going to have such a heavy burden. But the real point behind this, especially when you compare this law with ancient laws and such, that the basic principle is that let the punishment fit the crime. And contrast that with having the punishment fit the person. The punishment fitting the person would be, oh, you're powerful and you have a lot of money. You're going to be able to get away with certain things, that the punishment on you is going to be less. Or what you've done, as we find earlier in this chapter, let's say something is done against a slave. Well, they're somehow less important, therefore your punishment is less. Well, this is speaking against that, to say the punishment is going to fit the crime. It doesn't matter who did it. It doesn't matter who the victim is, because all persons are equal. No matter their position in society. So therefore, the punishment is going to fit the crime. Eye for eye, tooth for tooth. Let there be some reciprocity there.
So that really, actually, if you stop and think about the legal context of the ancient pagan world for the Israelites, where children while they were valued as an economic resource, children were sacrificed to the gods and things like that. This law of reciprocity applied to an unborn child or a newly born child miscarried is a radical departure from the kind of the culture of the day.
Yes, and not only for the child, but also for the woman, by the way, because often in those ancient societies, women were essentially possessions. And here, whether it's the child or the mother who dies, you're still going to get that same principle, so that the man has to bear the same burden as what was put upon either the woman or child, because they're both equivalent to this man's value.
What about in the greater context of the Old Testament, in particular God's law in the Old Testament? What else reinforces the notion that these children, unborn or newly born, were valued as human beings?
Well, there's a whole host of ways that you can answer that question. One would just simply be, notice the value that is placed upon a child just from the parents. So that when Abraham, for example, is given a child at an old age, this is a cause for joy. And those who were without children, it was a great source of pain. So that when the child comes along, it becomes a cause once again for joy and such. So children, rather than being seen as some kind of burden upon the parents or some kind of a detriment, instead they were seen as a source of greatest joy.
When these kind of situations are contemplated, this is a very practical kind of law. This is the kind of thing that could happen
on
a regular basis,
isn't
it?
Yes, it is. You know, one other thing that I think might be rather instructive, because since the linchpin on this specific passage is whether you should understand this as miscarriage in the sense of the child dying, and if the child dies, it's no big deal, to make the point that this is really just dealing with premature birth and that the child could come forth and actually be healthy and do just fine, there's a couple of passages where this verb is used where it would appear to be potentially talking about a miscarriage, as we often understand it, as the child dying as a result of the trauma. I want to point those couple out. First of all, the first one is in Psalm 144, verse 14, where it talks about not humans but cattle, and it's asking the Lord's blessing and such upon God's people, saying, may our cattle be heavy with young, suffering no mishap or failure in bearing, as in bearing children or bearing the calves that these cows have. Now, that's the standard translation, but the literal Hebrew there is that may our cattle be heavy with young, with no breaking in or going out. Now, what exactly does that mean? That sounds like good Hebrew poetry, which the Psalms are poetry, because you have these kind of distinct opposite things, breaking in versus going out, opposite actions going on. But at the very least, the point is that everything would go swimmingly forward with what's going on. Now, the one that's maybe more pertinent here comes from Numbers chapter 12. And this is where Miriam has been part of a rebellion against her brother Moses. And Miriam is set to be punished for it. And Aaron speaks on behalf of his sister, pleading her case. And one thing he specifically says in Numbers chapter 12, verse 12 is, let her, Miriam, not be as one dead, whose flesh is half eaten away when he comes out, there's the verb, of his mother's womb. Now, that one sounds like, well, it's dealing with stillbirth, miscarriage. He comes out of the womb half with his flesh half eaten away. But the key is actually, it's not the coming out that shows that it's a miscarriage. It's that there's this extra condition attached to it, that the flesh is half eaten away, which once again points out that to come forth from the mother's womb is just simply the Hebrew way to say the child has been born.
Is there anything in the context of the Old Testament that would support the notion that abortion is an acceptable thing before God?
No. No, there's absolutely nothing that is present there where children were regularly set forth as being of high value rather than something to be thrown away on the waste heap.
And the cultural context for that in the ancient world for what we would call abortion today, but the cultural equivalence of abortion in the ancient world, what was that?
Well, it certainly was something that is not new to our age. We certainly have to go not quite as far back in time as the Old Testament, you can go back to the time of the early church, the apostolic age, where the earliest writing we have from the New Testament church after the writing of the New Testament itself would be the Didache, which is the teaching of the 12 apostles, dates to about 100 AD. That one is very clear in that it actually says, you shall not procure an abortion, all right? Very straightforward that was considered contrary to the Christian faith. Now, the time of Moses is another 1,500 years prior to that, and there is evidence that there were means by which individuals could deal with unwanted pregnancies at that point in time as well, but it was something that was unknown to the people of God, that was not something that was within the pale of possibilities as far as if they're operating by a worldview that is driven by a God who loves life.
Dr. Kevin Golden is pastor of Village Lutheran Church in Ladue, a suburb of St. Louis, and he has a PhD in Biblical Studies from Concordia Seminary in St. Louis. Kevin, thank you very much for being our guest.
Always good to be here.
Tomorrow on Issues Etc., we'll continue our series, Does the Bible Support Abortion Rights? Talking with Dr. Nathan Jastrom about Numbers 3 and Numbers 5. When we come back, we'll teach a Sunday school lesson with Pastor Tom Baker of Law and Gospel.
Issues Etc. regular guest Craig Parton will present Christianity for the Academic and the Artist as part of the Village Lutheran Lectures on Christianity and Culture. Join us on Saturday, October 3rd, 2 p.m. at Village Lutheran Church, 9237 Clayton Road in suburban St. Louis. To learn more, go to villagelectures.com. Christianity for the Academic and the Artist, Saturday, October 3rd, 2 p.m., Village Lutheran, St. Louis.
Yes, there is a Messiah in Seattle. Messiah Lutheran Church and Concordia Lutheran School have served North Seattle for over 60 years, and we invite you to join us on Sunday mornings at 8 and 10:45 with Bible study at 9:20. Messiah Seattle is proud to support Issues Etc. To learn more, watch our adult information class videos online or on DVD. Our website is messiahseattle.org, 206-524-0024.
I like being female, and I have never felt even remotely bad about being female I don't know if that's because I've always steadfastly avoided women's magazines, which I think are just designed to make you feel bad.
Journalist Molly Ziegler-Hemingway speaking at the Issues Etc. Making the Case conference.
But I've always known that being female is pretty awesome. And the only time it actually occurs to me to even feel remotely bad about it is when feminists start telling me that I'm doing everything wrong. And I think it's so interesting that feminists have such a problem with these traits that we do associate with women a little bit more. Feminists are on this campaign to make women more like men.
You can listen to Molly's presentation, Making the Case for the Differences Between Men and Women, and teachings by Paul Meyer, David Menton, Will Whedon, Chris Roseborough, and Jonathan Fisk on an audio DVD from the 2015 Making the Case conference. We'll send it to you for a donation of $300 before Labor Day. Just click the DVD logo at issuesetc.org.
Equipping the priesthood of all believers, you're listening to Issues Etc.
Steadfast Lutherans, people who believe the law condemns everyone and should be preached to the fullest. People who believe the gospel is for everyone and should be preached to its sweetest. Traditional Lutheran doctrine and practice deliver every Sunday this law and gospel, that Christ was crucified for us sinners. To all who received him, who believed in his name, the Gospel of John says, he gave the right to become children of God. To see how Steadfast Lutherans preserves this good news for everyone, visit steadfastlutherans.org.
Do you have a hard time finding Christian greeting cards and gifts that aren't either sappy or theologically suspect? Ad Crucem offers the perfect combination of art and the truth of the scriptures with beautiful and reverent greeting cards and gifts. Deliver the true comfort of the gospel, Christ crucified for sinners, to family and friends with Ad Crucem. ADCRUCEM.com. Confessing the faith through art and word. ADCRUCEM.com.